Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the episode number 27 of the Canadian Bowler Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Lucas Caldwell, and I'm here with Daryl.
Luke, how's it going?
Oh, you know, Daryl, not so bad. How's it going with you?
It's going pretty good. Sun's shining in Ontario, so hopefully better days ahead.
What are you in your last full month of being a non-parent person, I suppose?
Yeah, May 30th is the due date. We all know how babies like to keep schedules, so I'm sure it'll come right on that date, but soon enough, yeah.
Well, guys, before we get into our show today, which I think is going to be a good one, just remember to do all the usual stuff. Remember to comment, like, follow, subscribe, all that fun stuff. If you're not available to watch the rest of the show today, we are available on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, is the two big ones, and then everything else. I'm pretty sure we're out there.
Yes.
And don't be afraid to share with your friends. We're growing slowly but surely. We're up to 607 subscribers. I think we hit 600 after our last show. So slowly increasing day by day on our goal of 1,000 by the end of the year. And I guess let's just get right into it today, Daryl.
Sure.
We got a pretty special guest, in my opinion. He's probably my best friend in the whole world, someone I talk to a lot and have spent a lot of time with over the years. I've done a lot of good and arguably bad things with over the years. He's probably one of the most decorated Canadian bowlers inside the country. That would be Michael Patulli. Michael, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. How are you guys?
Pretty good.
Thanks for having me.
So, Mike, let me jump in here with Luke's question and say, tell us a little bit about yourself for those that don't know something about you.
Okay. So my name's Mike Patulli. Been a lawn bowler for, when I was at 2003 would have been my official year. I joined our club. We had a rule that you had to be able to throw the ball to the end of the green, so I passed that test in 2003. My whole family, we lawn bowls. My parents have been bowling since the mid-80s. They pretty much took time, brother and sister, one of them had to babysit, one of them got to lawn bowl, and they've been playing ever since then. My mom was on the national team for over 20 years. My dad's been to nationals a couple times. He won Canadians with my brother and me. My brother also was on the national team, and I had a little bit of a spell on the national team as well. More recently, I've kind of got into coaching and sort of the development side of bowls. So that's sort of been my last few years.
I mentioned that you're one of the more decorated players out there, Mike. What are some of like your most important accomplishments the most important to you?
The most important accomplishments I've had, won four Canadian championships in the last, I guess it'd be 6 years, 7 years. So won two fours championships, one time with my brother and my dad and Grant Wilkie, sub Alex Scott in for my dad the one time. And then I've won pairs with my brother twice. So we've had a pretty good run here in the last six or so years. My brother and me have made it was actually every Canadian championship for the last 6 years until we kind of hit COVID here where nothing's really been happening. But I think we had six in a row there where we got two silvers and four golds.
That's incredible. I kind of wanted to carry that forward and ask you, what is it about Saskatchewan or in Saskatchewan or maybe just in the club that you're at that has helped to produce so many good bowlers, not only in the past with say like your mother and Murray, but you and your brother, people like the Watsons and Jordan Cuss, for those that that know them as well, there's been like a string of really, really great bowlers coming out of there.
Yeah, we've had a pretty good set of people ever since about the 80s come through Regina. Regina has one of the three four green facilities in Canada, so it's quite a beautiful facility if you've ever been there. We have also pretty good support, or we used to have pretty good support from the city until just a couple of years back. The city used to do our greens and give us a pretty good break on our fees and everything. That's changed, not so good anymore, but they still have the facility, and they kind of built a really good platform in the 80s, specifically like someone like the Ronies. They've been around for 40 years plus now at this point, and they really did build a very good like coaching program and sort of mentoring program for our club. So if you're someone who wants to get into bowling, we have kind of like a mentor program where you kind of show the new members around. And then if you're wanting to get coached, there's quite a good coaching program where you have to go through some lessons, but then there's also kind of the more in-depth, if you're wanting to be competitive, I guess there's more in-depth coaching as well. So I think the combo of all that kind of leads to having some of the better bowlers you've seen. And then really there's kind of the mentor side of it too, where if you have players like a Keith Roney or a Gene Roney around, it's pretty easy to talk to them and get background or help to improve yourself or take yourself to whatever level you want to be.
Now, you said you've been doing a bit more of the coaching, and I know we're going to go deeper into this later in the show, Mike, but what was something that made you want to become a coach?
My dad was a really good coach for me. So he's a really, if you know him, calm and kind of cool-headed guy. And he was good for me early on in my days of bowling when I wasn't quite so much a cool and collected guy. He really helped me get into the bowls, sort of learn it, the strategy, everything like that. He's got a great bowls mind. And after I kind of had him impart his knowledge on me, I had the Watsons coming up behind me. They were kind of starting in our junior program. And it logically made sense that I would start coaching or helping them out because my dad helped me out and kind of just felt like I should be passing on whatever knowledge I did have. So I sort of went that route, and for about 5 or 6 years when they were in the junior and early U25s, I did coach both of them, and Brandon ended up winning a Canadian championship the one time. And I remember from afar, Carter got to the Canadian final, and it was in Halifax, so I was watching that nervously from Saskatchewan because I wasn't there that one. But it's fun to help people along and sort of give them any sort of coaching, or in my sense it's more just competition. I play against them a lot just to sort of get them a decent player to throw some bowls against, and it's helped them out a lot, I think. And I think they're both on the national team at this point, so it's good to see that some of the work has paid off a bit.
It certainly has. I wanted to ask you, because I get this question a fair bit, do you find it more or less nerve-wracking playing versus coaching when you're watching one of your players play in a big event versus you playing in an actual big event?
100% coaching. Coaching is a terrible demon at points, because you sit there and you know what the person's thinking, because usually you know the person you're coaching pretty well, and you see some of the decisions they make, and you kind of antagonize yourself over why did they do that or why didn't they do this. So coaching is 100% more nerve-wracking, because when you're in the moment, you're playing the game, you don't really think about what you're doing. You just play your shot, kind of make your decisions, go from there. You might maybe talk to your coach for 30 seconds, but coaching is terrible. To sit there on a bench and then have to wait for someone to seek you out is not an easy thing to have happen to you.
I agree 100%.
Mike, you said you spent a little bit of time on the national team, which obviously I knew that, but I know in the past you've talked to me about opportunities for people outside of the national team to play international bowls, and I know you're really big on that. What are some of your favorite events, and why would you recommend people who are aspiring international players to play in something like that?
I personally have played in the Dutch Open twice. So biannually, before COVID started, they ran a tournament in Haarlem, Netherlands, every 2 years. And it was kind of a collective of European countries that would send out, but it's an open tournament, essentially. You get your entry in there, and you don't necessarily have to be a national team person or be a representative of the national team. You're just maybe representing your country. So both times I played in that tournament, I wasn't yet on the national team at that point, but I got to pretty much pick a group of friends. The one time I played with my family, it was my mom and brother and Amanda Berg. But you kind of just get to pick your team, go there, and it's a great opportunity to play against national teams or high-level players, because although these people might not be their national team, they probably are a collective of people who either used to be or some people are on the team, some used to be. So it's, you're going to get a lot of good players or formerly very good players. So it's a great opportunity to, whenever you go to sort of open events like that. And then I've also played in some other like US Open type events where you're always playing against high level talent. You're usually getting the national team players from other countries. And I really do recommend traveling anywhere you can to play in tournaments, because anytime you play against high level people, play on different greens, get the experience, it's invaluable to your bowls career.
Right on.
Now, you've been to a number of places. You talked about the Dutch Open. What was your experience like playing in Tiger Bowls and the China Open?
It's quite an interesting experience. You've been there before, Daryl, so yep. You know all about China and Hong Kong. Hong Kong's quite a nice event at like the Skins format. If you've never played it before, it's quite an interesting, way different than normal bowls format, where you're kind of focusing on getting more than one point and then protecting and only giving up one. It's very complicated, but I enjoy the Skins format. It's kind of keeps you always playing for that next end, because you could add a bad couple ends to start the game, and if you play well second half of the game, you might still get more than half of the skins. So it's a fun format there in Hong Kong. It's definitely an interesting country, because it's just a very lively city, so you definitely got a lot of the nightlife to enjoy there. And then just sort of seeing all the food and everything there is really cool. And they're terrific hosts. If you ever end up going, like the hotel you stay at is awesome. And then the food and everything there is great. China is a little bit of a different beast, because you get into China and it's a nice tournament as well. The greens are a little bit on the slow side, is a bit of an understatement, I guess. They're very slow greens. So that aspect isn't that much fun, but it's still good. You're playing against elite talent, because a lot of the European countries send essentially their national team to that. And so it's a good tournament to play in. It's, if you've never done it and you get an opportunity to do it, I would recommend it, because Hong Kong and China are both great places to see. And then the tournaments are terrific tournaments to play in.
And if you had to rate on a scale of 1 to 10, how good or bad would you say Sing Tao is?
Well, as you know, I'm a beer fan, so Sing Tao will throw 6.5 out of 10.
That's more than I was expecting. So
the deal there was, you're traveling, you're usually pretty young, it's cheap, and they're usually pretty big, so you get your bang for your buck, right?
Yeah, when we were there, we had another young English team with us, and we drank the grocery store out of beer after 2 days, and they got in another beer, which was called Snow. It was terrible, like absolutely terrible beer. So my 6.5 for Sing Tao is slightly elevated, because Snow is probably a 3 or a 4 on my list. So Sing Tao is quite an improvement on some of the beer that you can get in China.
I wanted to ask you about something that's near and dear to my heart right now. Obviously, I'm expecting a child very shortly, but so are you. How is that going for you right now?
Well, it's going along. I'm pretty sure you and me have had a couple conversations about pregnant life, because when you have a pregnant wife, not so much a happy life sometimes. So we have to do some weird things. My wife specifically has been loving the pie lately, so had to make some runs to the grocery store late night. But beyond that, it's been pretty standard, kind of an excitement type of a thing, because I'm not quite as suited as you, but we're about 3 months, just over 3 months out. So same thing, we're kind of getting ready for it, and I got to start building some cribs and all that fun jazz in the next little while, so should be an interesting couple of months.
absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know what that life's like, but I'm glad you're enjoying it.
I wanted to ask you about, in relation to that, family and bowls. Obviously, we see huge family ties in and amongst our bowls community, regardless of province or even country. What does it mean to you to have the majority of your family bowl and bowl at a competitive level and have such an ingrained presence in the bowls community?
It's obviously huge. I think it's been a massive part of my family for my entire life. Like, my mom always makes a comment that I was born on the green because she played until she was about 8.5 months pregnant. And then I was born and she was bowling by the end of that summer again. So it's one of those things that my birthday's in June, if you need context. So my mother had me in June and then proceeded to start lawn bowling by August again. So it's a massive part of our family. It's been a great bonding thing because Dad, me, and John have won Canadians and played at Canadians before. And if you've ever experienced that with a father or a family member, it's pretty special to play with your family in an elite competition, especially win. It's really just one of probably my top bowls highlight is still 2011 when we won together. So moving forward, like, the family aspect, it's going to continue to be a big part. Like, priorities are probably going to change slightly for me in the next little while. Just the kid, I might not be as invested in the bowling anymore, but my dad and my brother will still be around, too, with my mom. And maybe about 10 years from now, there might be a little patootie throwing some lawn bowls and maybe playing with grandpa and grandma in some tournaments or something. It's a bit of a dream. We were talking about it the other day, and something I'd love to see maybe 10, 12 years down the line when they're able to throw the ball to the other end of the green.
That's awesome. I think that's one of the main things about bowls is it's multi-generational. I think we've talked about it a number of times on this show. It's something that you can promote, and you can play from when you're 10 years old, let's say, right up until you're 90 if you're still able to do it. And it's one of those sports that is unique where, you know, you're not going to see that in a hockey or a soccer or whatever, where you need a lot of athletic ability and that tends to deteriorate over time. So that's awesome. I'm really happy to hear that. And I do hope that you get that huge multi-generational Petulia family on the greens.
Yeah, and then we'll have to see our future children fighting it out on the junior green about 15 years from now.
That's right.
With us coaching on the sidelines.
Mike, I don't know what to ask you, but I guess we could talk about... Sorry, go ahead.
Let's see, I've got one for Daryl. Like, we haven't really got so much into the coaching side of things, but... I did have a question for Daryl.
All right.
So with Canada and our coaching program that we currently have developed, what do you feel is lacking for a coaching program in Canada? Like, what could we improve on, or what should we kind of focus on improving in the immediate future to kind of build bowls forward?
That's a really excellent question, and it's a very tough question. In my opinion... What we're missing, which I see in other countries, are coaches linked to the national program that are in every province. We've started to roll that out a little bit with the regional coaching network. We've got Tammy Foster Vigneault in Nova Scotia, Derek Dillon in Alberta, and Mary Wright in BC, who have kind of joined with the national program to be the kind of oversight coach on the ground in those provinces to really help promote the program. And I think that goes along with another piece that I think we're missing, which is continuity across Canada. You go from province to province, you even go from club to club, and a player that's played the same amount of years, had similar experiences, play and understand the game at such different levels. It's unbelievable. some players that have played only a few years, say in a Saskatchewan, where they've had someone like yourself dealing with them and teaching them the game, versus someone who has just had an experienced bowler at a club kind of show them the ropes. At that 10-year mark, they are miles apart. So it would be great to see some continuity, some more understanding of the game, and some good best practices or processes going forward at club level to really give bowlers a good chance to understand the game.
So I guess you're sort of targeting more of a grassroots approach or regional approach, where you kind of build it more locally or provincially and then kind of have it expand and sort of interlink with the national team and things like that, correct?
Yeah. The issue that I find being at the national level and coaching is we get players coming through who are excellent players, but there's just key pieces missing, where you're not sure why they missed it, or you're not sure necessarily how to fix those pieces, where they should have been taught at a level a little bit lower so that they grew with it, they understand it, and the habits kind of form, where we're missing some of those pieces. And especially in some provinces where there are fewer bowlers, granted, and as a result there's fewer coaches, maybe there's not a real push to be certified coaches or take the programs to really understand why coaching is important. So getting those programs under our belt and having that uniformity and coast-to-coast understanding and communication, that's, I think, where we're going to get the most bang for our buck.
I think what you said there, Daryl, just about like the whole grassroots part of it, I think that's kind of got to be the direction it's got to go in, just as a player. Say when I was on the national team, obviously I had the opportunity and the ability to reach out to like yourself and Terry as my coaches, but then when you're not on the national team, those coaches really aren't necessarily there for you. I mean, if someone's willing to help you, then they're willing to help you, but at the same time they have a lot on their plate already, so they might not. So if there's more grassroots level coaches for the player who's not on the national team, then obviously there's more opportunity for those players.
Absolutely. It's tough because and I guess I can ask this question out to you guys. Since you've started, have you noticed an increase in coaching, or an increase in the number of coaches, or the quality of coaching that you've seen at your club or in your province?
I'd say at my club it's kind of gone up and down, I guess, depending on who is around and whatnot. I think at a time, just at my club, I think the coaching was at like a decent level. We had a few people that were taking it relatively seriously, but I feel like that kind of just like fell by the wayside eventually. And I mean, at this point, I think the only coaches that are there, they may or may not have a coaching certificate, but I think it's more of just like a volunteer who goes out there and shows new people what to do and maybe teaches, like, you know, like when people sign up and you get like a free lesson or something, basically how to roll a bold on the green, and that's pretty much it.
Like, if I were to comment, like, I think the quality of coaching has significantly increased, specifically my home club. Like, I can think just off the top of my head, in the last 5 years, I think we now have 3 or 4 competition level trained coaches or certified coaches. So it's kind of like the middle level of coaching that you can get. And I think we have one who's actually, like, David Kalin is, I don't know what his level is, but it'd be whatever our highest or second highest level that we have in Canada for coaching at this point. So I also have gone about halfway through that process of becoming a competition coach. But again, it's not the easiest process to get certified as a coach, because you have to usually get the people from, I think David's now certified to actually oversee us, but to actually be certified, we used to have to get like a person from like a curling club or some other sport to come and oversee the activities we were doing. Yeah. So definitely quality's improved, because there's a lot of more resources, I think, in the last decade through like the internet and sharing emails, things like that, with like different bowls. Drills, like the 36 bowl, 72, whatever you want to do is like drills. There's a lot more resources people can share compared to like 15 years ago. There wasn't as many resources being shared. There wasn't, so the quality wasn't there. I think the quantity was still there because people could call themselves coaches. And really, as Luke says, just show you how to throw a bowl. They know how to boat the sport, but they might not really have any of the theory or any sort of the kind of teaching about what coaching is and what you need to do to be a good coach. So quality is significantly improved. Quantity is probably about the same.
Now, I have a question for both of you guys, I guess. So Mike said there's a lot of resources out there, which is obviously true. I mean, people like Daryl put out videos on coaching from time to time and whatever else is out there. Now, with the age of the internet, you can learn pretty much how to do anything online now, whether you're professional or not. Do you think it's possible for a player in lawn bowls to become elite without a real coach and just watching YouTube videos?
It's possible. It would be difficult, and it's just like anything else. Like I can watch videos on how to renovate my bathroom, but when I actually go to do it, I can take those steps, but it's going to be difficult. I'm not going to be as good as they are doing the drills. So someone could become pretty good, and we've seen it in the past. I know Derek Dillon's saying no. It could become good. A lot of us that are out there right now are pretty good, but a coach significantly improves that chance, and a coach significantly improves the quality. So you learn by yourself, you're going to hit a ceiling, right? There's a point where you're not going to learn much more, but with a coach, you're going to get that much more, which is, I think, a huge important part of the learning process.
To answer that question in the chat, no, nothing is pre-recorded today. This is all live.
This is live.
So if I were to, baby. If I was to give my two cents there, so without a coach, you're going to hit a ceiling, as Daryl says, pretty quick. I think with videos, you can kind of get the gist of the sport, probably work out a few of your kinks, but like with the delivery, like when you have a technically flawed delivery or something along those lines, it's pretty difficult to get that feedback from, like, without a coach or somebody watching you telling you that your delivery isn't good. So that's my thing, is that you do need that coach, you do need that feedback from someone directly, or even a coach to help you with the technical side of bowls, I guess, with the strategy. Because if you're brand new, as much as you can watch all these games on YouTube of these teams playing, if you're playing in a game and you don't really understand the strategy, it's very difficult to learn that from a YouTube video, because what you're seeing and what actually happens in games and how things work in games, you have to be taught that. You have to be kind of shown that by a coach, and it's something you can't really learn artificially, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
Question in chat. So question to each of you. What single piece of advice would you give a brand new bowler? I'll let you guys go first.
I don't know. Mike, go ahead, bud.
So single piece of advice that I would give a new brand new bowler.
Yeah.
I would honestly seek out a mentor or somebody to kind of walk you through your first little bit of bowling. Doesn't necessarily have to be an elite bowler, just someone who's played a few years, been in your club, because that person's gonna be able to walk you through the different types of bowling that there is. If you wanna be a social bowler, someone who just plays maybe the jitneys or a couple times a week type of thing, they can sort of steer you towards that, give you sort of the basics you need to get to that point where you're gonna be able to compete, sort of have fun. But then you could also get that mentor to steer you towards, if you want to be competitive, you want to play in those tournaments, they could steer you towards those tournaments. Perhaps they're a good enough player that they'll maybe play with you in those tournaments. So it's one of those things where that would be my one thing I would tell a new bowler, is sort of seek out a mentor, seek out somebody, because almost any person that you get the lawn bowling community were pretty friendly. They would definitely kind of help you steer towards whatever level you want to go with bowling, and then be able to hook you up with whatever resources you need to improve as well.
Yeah, I think I'd probably say something similar to that. At the same time, don't necessarily, I guess Dave just kind of took the words out of my mouth, don't necessarily listen to anybody at the club or everybody. Kind of take what advice you get and put it into like real time, like go out there and actually practice. And some things might not work for you that Jim told you, so but something that Larry told you might work better for you during practice. So just kind of bits and pieces from people around, and like Mike said, everyone's pretty friendly, so if you have any questions, it's not difficult to reach out and ask questions. But I think just being consistent and practicing just to try and learn the game is probably a good place to start.
Yeah, and for me, I agree with what you guys said. I would probably say, like you said, don't listen necessarily to the experienced bowlers all the time. Find somebody qualified, like a coach. Some places don't have coaches or don't have coaches very close, so you want to try to find that qualified person who understands the game and can actually give you at least the fundamentals. Don't get discouraged when things don't work. Don't take what people say or what people do as kind of the gospel of the game. Be skeptical, you know, ask questions. Don't be afraid to try new things and get comfortable in the game. What works for one person isn't going to work for you and isn't going to work for the next person. So you got to find what works for you and find enjoyment in the game. If you don't find enjoyment in the game, if you don't find the fun in playing it, you're not going to stay with it very long. So make sure you're having fun. If you really want to get competitive and go forward, find that coach, get stuff under your belt as far as understanding the game. But yeah, just never lose that fun. Always have fun when you're playing. That's important.
Absolutely. I don't know if we're still doing an interview style here, Daryl, but I just wanted to transition a little bit in case people are curious why this guy's still hanging around up here. So for those of you who didn't know, which is probably nobody, Michael is actually the newest addition to the Canadian Bowler payroll system here. He gets paid a massive amount of dollars, as I'm sure you can tell. But no, Michael's part of the team now, maybe not on the podcast, but he's part of our team with the Canadian Bowler After Dark and some of the content that should be flowing here sooner or later. But Mike, what do you bring to the Canadian Bowler? What's that experience been like for you?
Like I bring my awesome beard to the Canadian Bowler. So that's the first and foremost. But the experience for what I've experienced so far in the Canadian Bowler, it's been fun to make content and sort of think of content, things to sort of enrich the bowls community in Canada. So that's we've been working on things together. Like I think I need the unofficial producer mic badge or something like that, because kind of in the background I sort of run through ideas, give you guys ideas. So great to be part of it. I'll help in whatever way I can, and I'll definitely do my best to keep pumping out some good content for you guys in the future here.
Yeah, just some of the stuff that Mike has done in the background. Obviously, he's been on, I think, every, if not all of them, but one episodes of the Canadian Bowler After Dark. Mike comes up with a lot of talking points on those. That's probably one of the big ones. And obviously, he helped with the BPL thing because I can't read scripts to save my life. So Mike came in and kind of saved me a little bit there.
It's been a fun experience. When Luke and I started this, we really didn't know what was going to happen. We've now cracked 600 subscribers. We had Mike come on probably around the same time we were really thinking about doing the After Dark and getting into more content. And I can say it's been great having an additional person to bounce ideas off of, to hear news, to get more of another side of Canada experience, where Luke and I are in Ontario and we don't want this to be Ontario centric. We don't want this to be us two guys in the middle of, you know, in and around Toronto talking about bowls. We want this to be Canada wide and get perspectives from everywhere. So Mike's been a great addition. Plus, I mean, you can't argue with the beard, right?
It's the most friendly looking beard of all time.
We're gonna keep working on it too, because I don't think the pandemic's stopping in the immediate future. So my business meetings at work are still few and far in between, and you can hide a a big beard on camera pretty good, so I'll keep working on it for you guys.
Awesome. In the chat, somebody asks, or Dwayne asks, did Mike say he brings awesome beer or beard to the Canadian Bowler? And while he does bring an awesome beard, if you ever do spend much time with him, he usually does show up with some beer. So it usually works out kind of both ways there.
Yeah, well, I'll maybe have to give a beer review or something at some point for Dwayne there. Just because I misspoke, I'll maybe give him a beer review in every single show. So we had Sing Tao today, and we'll maybe throw something else from another Bowls tournament down the line there.
Awesome. Mike, have you ever seen Dave Portnoy from Barstool Sports as one bite pizza reviews?
I have not.
Well, we're going to have the Michael Patulli one sip beer review.
Okay. We'll get me a random beer. I'll give it a sip, and I'll give it a rating for you guys.
Perfect. So I wanted to cycle back. I did have a question in its relation to coaching while we're all here. There was an article, or I guess a blog post, posted by Bulls Canada. I've posted the link in the description below if you haven't seen it. It's on the Bias Bulls blog for Bulls Canada. It's on delivery, and we talked about flawed deliveries, and I wanted to get
technically flawed ones.
I just wanted to get a conversation going, or maybe just hear your perspective on that article where it talks about flawed deliveries or unique deliveries or strange deliveries versus fundamentally sound, and I guess they were using kind of the quote unquote normal delivery. How do you take that as a coach? Do you or even Luke as a player, would you work to try to change that player into what you picture as the perfect delivery, or does the success that the bowler is having kind of trump trying to fix those fundamentals?
I'll let you go first, Mike.
I guess for me, it kind of comes down to a balancing act. If you have a newer player who has a very technically flawed delivery or has lots of sort of hitches, it's probably pretty healthy to jump in there, kind of work on things, change it, overhaul it, as you're sort of saying, to go towards being the technically sound side of things. If you get someone who's a little more experienced, been around for a while, and maybe had those successes as you're talking about, that's kind of with the different side of things where you're going to maybe have to maybe shy away from going that route. That's just my opinion, I guess, though. But you can try and change people's deliveries if they're experienced, they're more established players, but it's difficult to get people out of habits, specifically with how they throw a bowl. Because me specifically, I know I don't have the most technically sound delivery. It's something I've always been told, but
might be technically flawed, some might say.
Exactly. But like, it's worked for me enough. Like, sort of went over, I've had quite a bit of success with it, and it's been good for me for the last few years. But I have worked on different points of it, because I know there's certain parts of it that aren't good, and that I've improved certain parts of it. But it's hard to overhaul a delivery once you've been around for a while and you've kind of been successful.
I guess my opinion on the matter is, I personally think that the term of a flawed delivery or technically whatever is stupid, in my personal opinion. For lack of a better word, I think some of the best bowlers out there don't have a quote-unquote sound or perfect delivery. I think, like what Mike said, with maybe a newer player, yeah, you could show them how to do the correct delivery. But I personally don't think it really matters. There's people like, for example, Mike, who have been told to have a flawed delivery, who have been successful. There's people like, if you look at a lot of the Scottish deliveries, they're pretty ugly, but they win a lot. I mean, my delivery myself is pretty atrocious, and I've been mildly successful myself. I think the only time again, in my personal opinion, that you need to really work on someone's delivery and change it is if it's going to cause problems down the road. Like, suppose if my delivery is hurting my body, and as the older I get, it might be more and more difficult to actually bowl that in that same way. Like, for example, somebody like Mike's brother, John, he's got a pretty interesting delivery with the – he's really low in push, and the older he gets, it might be more difficult down the road. But other than that, I really don't think it matters. I mean, if you can roll bowls to the jack, I mean, however you can get him there, I think that's really all that matters.
Yeah, I can agree with you guys. It's if you're having success, why would you mess with success? If the person's rolling really great bowls, even if their delivery and their arms and legs are all over the place, if it's consistent and consistent and consistent over and over again, why would you mess with it at that time? I think where the trouble between what I'll say is just like a really condensed, straightforward delivery without any other stuff coming in versus maybe a delivery that gets some style points for doing a few extra things in between all the movements. As a coach, it gets harder to fix those, to try to find the points where things are not going right. If you're flipping the bowl, some people like to play with the bowl before their delivery, you know, kind of get that weird hand twist. If you're not hitting that right on and getting that release out, as a coach, can you get rid of that flip? How do you fix that so the person does it right? It's really, really tough. And the more movement you put into it, where the balancing issues come into effect, how do you judge that and try to fix that without trying to just pull them right back into fundamentals? I think that's where it becomes more of an issue, where if something's going wrong and you have a unconventional delivery, let's say, it can be really tough to fix.
I think especially the hand twist that you spoke about, obviously it's pretty common, I think. Yeah. I feel like the people who've been doing it for a long time probably don't even know they're doing it. So I feel like that'd be a hard thing to take out of a delivery. I don't know. I guess like my opinion on it is, like, when I first got into the national team, they basically showed me a delivery and they said, like, this is what we want you to look like. And then I tried and I'm like, that's never going to happen. Like, I can't. It's just not going to work. So I feel like having a delivery they want, call it like the Australian delivery or the New Zealand delivery, whatever one they're trying to make you mimic in a way, I just feel like it doesn't work for everybody, especially like we've said, people who've been bowling for a period of time. It's definitely a lot harder.
Yeah, we live in Canada, so we need our Canadian deliveries for our heavy greens. So as you're saying, the Scottish deliveries sometimes look atrocious, but they work. Same thing, you get some Australian ones that I don't think would work on a Canadian green. So kind of a balancing act of figuring out what works for that person. And then if we have to do minor tweaks, I think minor tweaks is about all you can do for the elite players, but heavy overhauls potentially for the newer players if they're willing to accept that feedback and accept that work.
For sure.
Yeah, I think Derek Dillon makes an excellent point in the chat. Golfers get to be the best in the world and still work on their swing to improve. So why wouldn't bowlers do the same? And I totally agree. I don't see there being a time where you don't work on your delivery, you don't work on your fundamentals and get that down. Basketball players go out and shoot free throws, you know, 1,000 times between games just to get that down. So their percentage goes from 85% to 90% or whatever it is. It's a small fraction of all the stuff that they do, but they want to get that, you know, it's a difference between winning a game and losing a game, 1 point, right?
I suppose I can understand Derek's point, but what I'm saying is micro adjustments are fine, but I don't think, like, what I'm saying is I think the whole, like, idea of overhauling it to have a delivery look a certain way, that's where I think that doesn't work. Because let's say, for example, let's say the best golfer in the world goes out there and we're like, no, your swing's stupid. You have to completely redo it and do it like how Daryl does it instead of how you're doing it now, because he's not going to be as good as he was with his regular swing. I can almost guarantee you that no matter how good you are. It's like if I go out there and I have the worst bowling delivery in the world, and someone tells me I have to scrap the whole thing and start over, it's not going to work. Like, there's no way. It's going to take me a hell of a long time to get back to the same spot that I was at.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Luke.
Yeah. I think it's a tough argument on either side.
yeah, you're gonna get someone on either side of the fence there, and it again, like as I've kind of said with both my comments, it's such a balancing act to where you want to go. Being on the slightly more technical side, you can control probably your shots a little more. So if you do kind of have yourself refined a little bit and you have a consistent delivery, you're probably going to make one or two more shots a game. And if you make one or two more shots a game, that could be the difference in a game if you're in a close one. So it's one of those things that obviously can be a bit of a balancing act. But
I think for me, it comes down to like snapshots of certain points. When I look at a player, I try to take out all the other stuff that's going on. I'll take an extreme example. If I'm watching a video of Ian Taylor from Australia, he's got the funkiest delivery that you'll ever see. He does a windup and then releases. But if I take a snapshot of his setup, where he gets ready to bowl, take out all the stuff in between, and then look at the release, it's fundamentally really, really good. It's all the stuff in between that kind of throws you off and you say, like what the hell is he doing? I think you'll see that in a lot of players where they're not conventional, things aren't happening the way you'd think that they would happen, but if you get those fundamental points right, like your balance is good, your point of aim is good, and your release is good, and you can control all those points, you're going to get a good bowl, regardless of any style points you get in between for doing weird things.
Yep. I say, looking, you guys got some comments there in the chat. So we've got John Seitman commenting. So he's agreeing with what Derek was saying, that he's been working on his technical skills and kind of just blending it between the consistency and getting the technical side of things. So very valid point, just essentially adding what Derek was saying there. I don't know the answer to this question, so I'll leave this to you and Luke. Is there any bowling happening in Ontario, or has it been put on hold with the protocols?
As far as I know, there's nothing. I mean, at the moment, technically at the moment, like if the club was open, you can, because you're allowed to do outdoor activity. But I don't think there's any clubs open. I know they canceled the provincial championships, if I'm not mistaken, Daryl.
No, you're right.
And as far as I know, I mean, again, I don't think we wouldn't be open yet anyways. I'd say give it another month after this lockdown or shutdown emergency thing that we're in, and see what happens. But at the moment, no, there's nothing going on.
Yeah, Ontario, for those that don't know, around Canada, Ontario is in another lockdown. It's a little bit of a shit show here, with opening and closing and restrictions being put on. I know for my club personally, because I'm on the board, we've talked about opening, we've talked about opening day, and we keep pushing it back because we just don't want to be jumping the gun and getting people out there and having something happen. We want to be safe. We want to be responsible. We want to make sure all our players are safe. So no bowling on Ontario, but the greens are getting prepped. So hopefully when bowling opens and people are able to get on the greens will be in really good shape. I hope.
Hopefully. Yeah.
And David Anderson and Derek both say that Ian Taylor's release was perfect. He was a really good player. You could say he was tough to watch in his delivery. It was very, very unique. But like I said, if you take snapshots of those key points, you'll find a very fundamentally sound player. And that's why he was successful.
Yeah, if we go back to the example of my brother that Luke gave, if you watch John, his release point is probably almost identical every time, and he rarely misses his line because he gets so low and he pushes right onto it. So he's got a very weird delivery, but again, he hits his line, he hits his release point. So I guess if you can kind of consistently emulate those points, no matter how much you flail and do weird stuff beforehand, style points, as Daryl puts it, yeah. As long as you hit those two major concerns, you're going to be a pretty consistent player if you can emulate the same thing over and over again.
Absolutely. I want to take this opportunity to throw it that we're going to be putting out some new content not live content. This will be pre-recorded content for the channel. There'll be a chunk of it centered around coaching to begin with. A lot of stuff that we can do, obviously, in our offices and houses and not being able to go on the greens. We're hoping to expand that into a lot of other stuff once we're able to actually get back out there. Obviously, Mike's in Saskatchewan, so eventually down the line when we actually do get to travel and we can actually hang out together, we'll even expand that further. So we hope that you'll continue to support the channel. We'll hope that you continue to support this show. But look for other stuff to come out, and please share with your friends, share with your family, those that are in bowling. We hope that it'll help not only promote the sport, but grow the sport. And like you said, we want to promote coaching and player development as much as possible as well. So look out for that stuff.
Have you started the recording process of any of your stuff yet, Daryl? Just out of curiosity.
I have. It's very, very rough. For those of you that don't know, when you're recording a video, things don't always go as planned. I can probably record an hour's worth of content, like video, of me sitting here talking about stuff. And by the time I edit it, it's probably like a 20-minute video. So you put in a ton of time for a short window of what's good. So I'm going to be putting out a lot of short videos, 10, 15, 20 minutes, where I talk about one topic, like team building, different roles, like leads, seconds, vices and skips, team chemistry. I'll try to be boiling it down into one topic, so I'm not taking up an hour of talking about anything and everything. It'll be concentrated. If you want to know about team chemistry, go see this video. If you want to know the role of a lead, go see this video. And I will obviously be getting Mike and Luke to not only look at the content, but maybe even participate in creating some of it as well, because they have a lot of experience in a lot of areas that I've never played in, especially juniors. If we're talking about developing juniors, we're talking about playing as a junior, and growing up in other provinces, we can probably get some of that content out as well. So look for some new stuff. I'm hoping that we can get some of that stuff out soon.
Right on. Do you got any more topics for today, guys?
I don't think so. I think we're good.
We're good? All right. Well, I guess we'll shut her down here. Well, thanks again to my co-host, Daryl. And thanks for Mike, the newest edition of the Canadian Bowler, for coming on for an interview today and hanging out with us for the rest of the show. Thanks to everybody in chat for showing up today. We really do appreciate it. Just remember, if you missed the start of the show, it'll be posted live on YouTube right after the show, and it'll be available on all major podcast platforms. Remember to like, subscribe, follow, share with all your friends. Hit that little notification bell just in case you miss our little teaser thing on Facebook or whatever before the show goes live. And until next time, guys, I hope that all your bowls are touchers.